This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday, the 1st of March 2013. Hello there, and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 1st of March 2013. And this week, all the extracts have been edited by Bill Argles, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Roy Faithful. So let's have a look at what's on. Well, there's something here which is called Master of the Medieval. Less than a month after his sellout last appearance at the Guildhall, esteemed archaeologist Martin Biddle is back in Winchester. Professor Biddle, the Emeritus Professor of Medieval Archaeology at Oxford, will speak on religious houses and churches in medieval Winchester to the Winchester Catholic History Group. It will be on Monday, March the 4th at 7:30 p.m. at St. Peter's Church Pastoral Centre in Jury Street. Tickets are £5 on the door or £2.50 for students. Non-group members are welcome. And the Wainfleet Singers are doing the St. John Passion by Bach, and that's on Saturday the 9th of March in Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are on sale online from the Cathedral Box Office, 01962 857 275. There's a colossal cake sale returns for heroes. The colossal cake sale returns to Winchester this year, with a host of dignitaries on hand to help out, including local MPs Steve Brine and George Hollingbury. Winchester Mayor Frank Pearson will open the sale at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, March the 9th, and cakes can be bought at St. Maurice's Covert and the Brooks Centre. The sale is in its fifth year and will raise money for the Help for Heroes H4H charity, which cares for wounded servicemen and their families. And a major public event is to be staged in the Port of Southampton to celebrate the city's long and rich seafaring heritage. The Southampton Maritime Festival promises to be a feast of nostalgia, with historic ships, vintage vehicles, flypasts, bands and live music transporting visitors back to the 1940s. Now, this will take place over the weekend of May the 5th and 6th at the Ocean Terminal in Southampton's Eastern Docks, telling the story of the city's maritime legacy. Something back in Winchester here, at the Theatre Royal in Winchester, is Puccini's La Bohème, presented by Opera Up Close. This is on Friday the 15th and Saturday the 16th of March at 8 p.m. And also at the Theatre Royal in Winchester, there's The Table by Blind Summit and Space Panorama by Andrew Dawson. These are two award-winning epic plays on top of a table. They're on Monday the 18th and Tuesday the 19th of March at 8 p.m. and there is a matinee on Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. And for the box office, you need to phone 01962 840 440. Or you can go online to www.theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. The renowned photojournalist Tom Stoddart will speak at Winchester Photographic Society at the Discovery Centre on Tuesday, March the 12th at 7:30 p.m. He's covered various historic events such as the fall of the Berlin Wall, the election of Nelson Mandela in South Africa, wars in the Lebanon, former Yugoslavia and Iraq, and the HIV/AIDS catastrophe in Africa. This exhibition will and talk will be £12.50 and they're available at www.winphotosoc.co.uk. And finally, there is the Imperial Ice Stars Sleeping Beauty on Ice. That's on Tuesday this 12th to Saturday the 16th of March at the Mayflower Theatre. And the box office is 02380 711 811. Now, the lighting up time ends on Friday at 6:51 a.m. That's Friday, the 1st of March, and begins at 5:47 p.m. On Wednesday, the 6th of March, it ends at 6:40 a.m. and begins at 5:56 p.m. If you have any problems with your memory stick, there is a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826, and she will then send you a replacement memory stick. Please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player, before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure that the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. The two front page headline stories this week are Bold Plan to Remodel City Estate and Sport England Object to Super School Plan. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley.
Bold Plan to Remodel City Estate. Winchester's civic chiefs are hoping to buy a former pub and bulldoze it to make way for a new community centre, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. The City Council last week put in a bid for the new Queen's Head in Stanmore Lane, which had a price tag of £1 million. Bargate Homes had twice been refused planning permission to demolish the pub and build houses, as well as a convenience store. Now the council wants to move the Carroll Centre, Community Centre and Scout Hut in Summers Close to a new building on the cleared plot. Proposals for the new community and leisure hub include a 5-court sports hall and 80-space car park. If successful, it is proposed to build about 30 new homes on council land off Summers Close, freed up by relocating the Carroll Centre and two other buildings. The hub will form a central part of a long-term regeneration scheme for Stanmore, which is among the 30% poorest neighbourhoods in the country. The City Council paid planning firm Broadway Mallion £20,000 to prepare a framework to guide development over the next 10 to 15 years. Aims include improving life for locals, such as more affordable housing, better roads, and community facilities. The Chronicle obtained a copy of the Consultant's Planning Framework, or Emerging Vision, presented to councillors behind closed doors 2 weeks ago. Cabinet has to approve a report before it goes out to public consultation in April. The consultants identified potential sites for 413 homes in Stanmore, including 30 at Summers Close, if the Carroll Centre, Community Centre and Scouts Hut move. Other houses include Wavell Way, 200 homes, Kingsley Place, Prince's Place, 50, Wilberforce Close, Birch Drive, 35, Selborne Place, Wickham Place, 33, Eversley Place, Vicarage, 20, Kings Avenue, Cromwell Road, 20, Fox Lane, Stanmore Lane, 12. But it would mean demolishing some 77 homes to make way for more council dwellings, loss of open space and some allotments. Other proposals include revamped play areas, upgraded open space, improved sports pitches, new footpaths, a nature walk and extra parking. The funding will come from a pot of money for new council homes. Councillor Tate stressed the proposals were still at embryonic state, and he was aware Stanmore was already short of public open space, so housing numbers could be lower. He said most of the proposed new buildings would be council homes. Councillor Jamie Scott, who represents St Luke Ward, chaired a steering group for Stanmore Master Plan, which also includes Reverend Mark Gardner, vicar of St Luke's Church and a trustee of the Carroll Centre. Councillor Scott said a new community centre in Stanmore Lane would be more visible and encourage greater use of facilities, including the library. He described the proposals as exciting, but said locals would have to weigh up pros and cons. He said people don't like change and there is a lot of attachment to the Carroll Centre, Community Centre and Scout Hut. But a lot of families would like to see more council houses for their youngsters so they can stay in the area where they have grown up. Reverend Mike Gardner welcomed the proposed move to the former pub site. He said, "I think it is a very positive option for the whole community, as there would be easier access, a better location, and improved facilities."
And may we have the second front page headline story, please, Noel?
Yes, the headline is Sport England Object to Super School Plan. Plans to build a new super school in Winchester have been dealt another blow. Sport England has objected to the proposals at the Westgate School over the effect it could have on the nearby badminton centre, recognised as one of the best training centres in Britain. The County Council wants to build a 420-place primary school at the site in Cheriton Road, along with a 55-place nursery. In a report to the council, Sport England planning manager Vicky Aston said, "Sport England and Badminton England are concerned that the applicant has not adequately considered the needs of users of the badminton centre in the proposals to accommodate the new school buildings. A substantial amount of public money from a number of sources, including the County Council, Sport England, the Badminton Association of England and the Hampshire Badminton Association, was invested in the centre. The centre currently has two car parks containing 15 and 22 spaces, but under the proposals the first would be reduced to 11 spaces and the second would be replaced with landscaping." Ms Aston added, "The applicant's transport assessment does not appear to have given any consideration to the parking and access needs of the badminton centre users or staff. There is no mention of where staff will be able to park, either during or after school hours. Pedestrians would have to walk some distance past closed school buildings at night. This could mean that some users are reluctant to visit the centre after hours. Sport England is also concerned that proposals for a gate on Green Lane may further restrict vehicle access to the badminton centre and the proposed car parks nearest the centre. But Sport England would remove the objection if amendments were made to resolve these issues. A County Council regulatory committee is due to discuss the plan on March the 13th.
Thank you. And that concludes the front page headline stories. We now continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, and chronicle comment. I'll start with the death notices. Barrett, Angela Pauline Barrett, peacefully at the Moorwood Cottage Care Home, Chandler's Ford, aged 90. Bright, Winnie Bright. Butcher, Morris Butcher, peacefully at home. Farley, Roy Donald Farley of Easton, peacefully. Giles, Connie Giles, formerly of Sparsholt, aged 93. Kirby, Trevor Anthony Kirby, aged 58. Lawton, Ronald Ron Lawton, peacefully aged 81. Long, Anne Clarissa Long, peacefully aged 96. Percival, Richard Percival, aged 47. Thorne, Sylvia Thorne, peacefully aged 79, at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice, Andover. And finally, Woolof, Karen Nay Mills Woolof, aged 51. And now it's time for Christian Comment, read by Jane.
Christian Comment this week is Helping the Homeless. Last Friday, a little bit of local history was made in Winchester. The members of the independent homelessness charity Keystone, myself included, voted to become a subsidiary of the Bournemouth Churches Housing Association, a much larger organisation working over much of the south of England. Before the vote, someone asked whether Keystone could opt out if things didn't work out quite as well as hoped. The answer was no. The commitment was irrevocable. On the other hand, the level of trust between both parties was high, and we were convinced that we shared the same values, so we went ahead. Keystone had first approached BCHA about a merger. The regulation and fundraising around housing had become so complicated that we were hoping for the sort of economies of scale that come from joining a big setup. However, the vote to merge still felt like the first step onto an untried path marked no return. In Lent, Christians remember another path with no return, the way to the cross. We try to follow in that way ourselves. Though we all like to keep our options open, choices must give way to commitments, because only commitments connect us to others and bring lasting joy. Keystone is giving up its independence for one reason only. We believe that through committing to BCHA, we can serve our residents better. We believe that together we can more fully achieve our aim to relieve poverty, homelessness and unemployment by providing a permanent address and a stable environment as a stepping stone back into the community. Whatever lies ahead, we step out in the faith we can achieve more together. Lent is a time for giving up things, and independence is rather harder to give up than chocolate. Lent involves being stretched in the cause of love. It's a season for embracing the bigger cause, even if that stretch brings pain and perplexity. The desolation of Jesus' cry, "Why have you forsaken me?" is as much a part of this stretch as his triumphant shout, "It is finished." So while it feels both daunting and exciting to have said yes to this merger, the test of what Keystone has done doesn't lie in feelings. It lies in the extra capacity we'll have to face the challenge of homelessness in Winchester. Thanks to BCHA, we shall be able to grow in service. Our joy will lie in turning this choice into a greater commitment to present and future residents alike. And that was written by Canon Rowley Ream.
Now we've got 15 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Shirley.
Right. This one is written by Arnold Jarman, and it's headed, "A Job Well Done. Now Give Us a Cafe." Sir, may I echo the comments on the Hockley Viaduct made by Anne Bristow and congratulate all concerned on a super job. The design ideas and work have been carried out in a most skillful and attractive manner. The whole length of the new path is accessible, from which it is good to be able to see the countryside as well as the original engineering features of the railway, with some fine brickwork. I hope the barren concrete track bed on the viaduct itself will be mellowed by a few weeds in time. Next stage is a nicely designed cafe, timber and shingles, perhaps, to be located at 5 Bridges Road or Garnier Road. Come along, Winchester City Council. Over to you. It could be a money spinner. Arnold Jarman, The Pastures, Kingsworthy.
Dave Chawner says MPs should reflect views of majority, sir. In response to Mrs. Hartridge's letter re gay marriage in the Chronicle, February 21st, call me old fashioned, but I thought we lived in a representative democracy. A free vote in the Commons means MPs do not have to vote along party lines, but they should represent the views of their constituents. That means the views of the majority of constituents from all parties, and not just the views of a vocal minority, or indeed, themselves. Dave Chawner, Frampton Way, Kingsworthy.
And Keith Story writes that no evidence that younger is better. Sir, as one with a strong social conscience, I was disappointed by the feature article which focused on the age of our county councillors, Chronicle, February the 14th. The text and photos in the article appeared to have been calculated to suggest that older Conservative councillors should be replaced by younger Liberal Democrats. No evidence was presented that younger politicians would be any better. On the contrary, the age of our county councillors, with all their accumulated experience, may explain why Hampshire has one of the lowest unemployment rates, lowest council taxes, best educational services, and best recycling rates in the country. Indeed, independent auditors repeatedly score as outstanding in its overall performance. This is far better than younger councils in other parts of the country. The article mentions a Europe-wide survey and compares Hampshire with Spain, which has the youngest councillors. Perhaps that lack of councillors' experience contributes to Spain's collapsing local services and the highest unemployment rate in Europe. A Lib Dem candidate points out that it's harder for working-age councillors to attend primarily daytime meetings, hence the predominance of older councillors. However, to change from daytime to evening would not only damage family life of younger councillors, but incur significant extra costs because of the overtime payments to county officials who would have to attend the later meetings. Looking at the national picture, can one honestly suggest that oldies like Tony Benn, Paddy Ashdown or Michael Heseltine should not be politically active? We should no more question their age than their gender, sexual orientation, religion or race. Instead, we should applaud their contribution to public life. And that was Keith Story of St Cross Road, Winchester.
And this short letter is headed, Time to Decide Just Who Owns the Clock. And this is from Anthony Skinner. Sir, further to Julia Sanderson's letter concerning High Street clocks, as a result of my inquiries in Lloyds Bank a month ago, I was told that the clock outside was the landlord's responsibility, in this case, Winchester City Council. Subsequent inquiries to the City Council led to me being told that the clock was the responsibility of the tenant, in this case, Lloyds Bank. It is therefore surprising that, over so long, it has shown the time at all. Anthony Skimmer, Berwick Road, Winchester.
State education has a lot to commend it, says Sue Godfrey. Sir, may I reassure Maria Hutchins over her fears for her son's education in Eastleigh? I benefited from an excellent state education there, enabling me to attend one of the top Russell Group universities to pursue my passion for science. In fact, after teaching in state comprehensives for many years, I am now an associate lecturer at a different university, promoting science amongst gifted and talented youngsters in local state schools. Our two sons went through the same system, achieving triple science firsts at Cambridge and Durham, going on to postgraduate study and highly successful careers. While there's a broad spectrum of ability amongst our young people and varying degrees of parental interest and support, I can honestly say that able children can do well in the state sector. They also have the advantage of social skills acquired by growing up alongside others of all abilities and backgrounds. Sue Godfrey, Tiverton, Devon.
And Andrew Oates writes, what's the point of having green belt? Sir, some time ago you published my letter regarding my disgust at the planning go-ahead following a long campaign to stop Sainsbury's building in Bishop's Waltham. Yet again, the people of Botley and Bishop's Waltham are being hit with planning being approved for thousands of homes in Botley, which is just typical of local planning to ruin our local community. I'm sure this was approved a while back when Sainsbury's put in their application the population not being enough to sustain a Sainsbury's in Bishop's Waltham. What is the point of Greenbelt if planning can be approved? What has this country come to if money and housing ruins our countryside? The infrastructure will not cope with extra traffic. Schools won't take the extra pupils. I know there is a need for social housing, and MPs are saying it's not fair that children have to share bunk beds. All I can say is that I have worked hard to pay for my own house, and I too have children. But I wouldn't expect to get handouts for my choices in life. It's time for people in this country to fend for themselves. And that's Andrew Oates, address supplied.
This one is from Roy Perry, and it's headed, More Caring Way of Making Economies. Sir, I agree that it would be good to have more younger councillors. Chronicle, February 14th. However, whether it is realistic for people engaged in full-time professional or business careers to carry out the heavy load required of executive members on such a large authority as Hampshire County Council is open to question. I know my role as executive member for Children's Services is more than a full-time commitment. It should never be done by someone in employment. Councillor House, the Liberal Democrat leader, seems to solve his problem by holding a range of publicly funded posts, producing a very significant income, making him Hampshire's most expensive councillor. I do not think that is the answer. I take issue with him when he says, it's hard to imagine a younger cabinet cutting children's centres. The County Council has actually kept all children's centres open, but we used our experience to find ways of running them with less bureaucracy and at less cost, but with more frontline workers and targeted at more vulnerable families. Perhaps Councillor House can explain why Lib Dems in Portsmouth are actually cutting the number of children's centres in that city. Could it be that they have also had to face up to the funding pressures? Fortunately, we found a more caring way of achieving the necessary economies. Incidentally, as a hands-on grandfather, I have often picked up my grandchildren from nursery and have regular contact with it. So Councillor House must not assume I am out of touch with the needs of young families. Roy Perry, Councillor, Hampshire County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
Rachel Remnant says felling helps rare grassland habitats. Sir, re last week's letter, the tree felling at St Faith's Meadow and St Catherine's Hill, Winchester, is to help rare grassland habitats, which have been damaged by shading and nutrient input from leaf fall in the last 50 to 100 years. As sites of special scientific interest, they are protected by Natural England, and the selective removal of trees and scrub has their consent. The Forestry Commission granted felling licences to help restore the features of these SSSIs. These include chalk grasslands at St Catherine's Hill and tall herb fen at St Faith's Meadow. Animals that benefit include chalk hill blue butterflies, harvest mice and reed warblers. With tree and scrub management and appropriate grazing, these species can survive. There's also a guided walk at St Faith and St Cross Meadows this Saturday, March the 2nd, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m, meeting at Garnier Road. Rachel Remnant, Hanson Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, Bradbury House, Derngate, Winchester.
Pam van der Steen writes, wrong time is bad reflection on city. Sir, I'm also concerned that two prominent clocks in the High Street have not worked for some time. A recent phone call to the city offices confirmed responsibility for maintaining the clocks rested with the businesses where they are sited. The railway station clock is also unreliable, and even when corrected, doesn't last long. It really is time these clocks were repaired and kept maintained, as Winchester should not be subject to neglect. And that was Pam van der Steen, Old Kennels Close, Oliver's Battery.
And this one is from Clive Schofield, and it's headed, "Repeating a statement does not make it any more true." Sir, re the proposals to develop the Westgate School, Winchester, despite what Hampshire County Council says, as a resident, I can say categorically that I and others were not consulted about the original decision. Having seen the minutes of a recent meeting between concerned residents and the County Council, I note that Peter Colnutt, head of strategic development, is quoted as continuing to maintain consultation of residents did take place. Appendix C of the July 17th decision-making report states that residents were not part of the group, and a letter pupils were asked to take home reporting the consultation process was after the decision had been taken. Simply repeating a statement does not make it any more true. The plans are seriously flawed as regards transport, and the area will be gridlocked with cars far in excess of council estimates. Local residents are not being well served by those running this process. More thought needs to be put into resolving very obvious shortcomings, or the plans should be rejected. Clive Schofield, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Stuart Heedon explains why I'll be walking in their shoes. Sir, excuse me. I'm marking International Women's Day, March the 8th, by joining Care International's Walk in Her Shoes campaign. Millions of women and girls in Africa and Asia walk an average of 4 miles every day, carrying back-breaking loads. There is little time for school or to earn a living. I'm walking 10,000 steps a day for a week in March. By raising £100, I can help build a water pump close to a poor community, saving them their gruelling daily walk and giving them a fighting chance. Please visit careinternational.org.uk/shoes. I'll repeat that. Visit careinternational.org.uk/shoes. Stuart Heedon, The Maltings, Hambledon.
And Paul Twelvetree writes that the state should treat everyone the same. Sir, it is true that the subject of gay or equal marriage raises strong opinions, albeit in a minority. In my experience, most people aren't concerned and are happy to live and let live. On the face of it, the issue of equal marriage is quite straightforward. However, it does raise important questions as to how the state and our elected representative regard equality and discrimination. Should not the law treat everyone equally? Should the state discriminate against a minority and deny them rights available to the rest of society because of their sexuality? Should an MP use his religious beliefs as a reason to continue that discrimination? The ability to enter into a same-sex marriage will not make any difference to most people. It won't be compulsory, and it won't be the end of society as we know it. Whilst people are entitled to hold their own personal opinion, I would hope that most would agree that the state should treat everyone the same, free from discrimination. That includes giving everyone the chance to celebrate a commitment to their partner through marriage, if they wish, regardless of whether they are gay or straight. What churches decide is another matter. And that was from Paul Twelvetree, Burriton Road, Winchester.
And this one is headed "Misanthropic Views of Tiny Minorities" from Roger Grocock. Sir, once again, the Chronicle has confused the right of tiny minorities to speak freely with the paper's obligation to reflect proportionally the opinions of all its readers. This time, it has sought the predictably extreme views of Chris Gillam of Twyford Down notoriety on the issue of fuel pricing, page 1, February 14th. Never likely to have any sympathy for the only reliable, go-anywhere, anytime form of public transport, Mr. Gillam has picked on taxi drivers because they run their engines while stationary, disavowing their right and duty to maintain for themselves and their passengers a comfortable environment. But, once again, misanthropic views directed unhelpfully at the innocent have had another airing in the name of editorial balance. Meanwhile, it would be helpful when a taxi driver is sitting outside his house, waiting for the passenger to emerge, if instead of tut-tutting, he could do something eco and taxi-friendly and chivvy up his tardy neighbour. Roger Grocock, Ashdown Close, Chandler's Ford.
And from Margaret Wilde, here's an opposing view on the gay marriage issue. She says, this legislation will create inequalities. So, liberals believe in a more equal society, Chronicle, February the 21st. Equality for whom? Same-sex couples in a civil partnership already have all the legal rights of marriage. By contrast, the Marriage Same-Sex Couples Bill, which Steve Bryan voted against, will introduce inequalities for many who, by reason of conscience or faith, believe in traditional marriage. Any teacher who fails to endorse same-sex marriage could be dismissed. Parents will have no legal right to withdraw children from lessons which endorse same-sex marriage. Public sector workers could be demoted or dismissed for saying they believe marriage is between one woman and one man. And this is just the thin end of the wedge. According to expert legal opinion, government claims that their proposals will ensure all religious organisations can act in accordance with their beliefs is tenuous in the light of evolving UK and European law, no matter how many locks are put in place. The latest independent ONS survey showed 1.5% of UK adults identified themselves as gay, lesbian or bisexual. Also, according to the government's 2012 assessment, only 3% of gay people would enter a same-sex marriage, less than 0.1% of people in the UK. Yet the government is trying to pass legislation which will create inequalities for many more people and undermine precious freedoms of conscience, speech and belief. We need to tell the government and MPs not to undermine the freedoms of our nation. Margaret Wilde, St Anne's Close, Winchester.
And Chris Blackman writes, councillors have viable alternative. Sir, it may not be well known by your readers, but government rulings mean it is very likely that all new schools across England will be either free or academy status in future. Mr. Gove has decreed that any applications for new schools must first be offered to an interested party to create a free or academy status school, and only when that avenue is exhausted may the county authority apply to seek alternative arrangements. Perhaps this is why the Westgate Through School proposal has been favoured by county councillors so far. Being effectively an extension to the existing school, Westgate Secondary School, the proposal need not go down the free or academy route, and the land upon which it will be built remains owned by Hampshire County Council, not a private entity. The decision on Westgate Primary is due to be made by county councillors on March the 13th. Placing the 420-pupil school within yards of Western C of E, Westgate Secondary and Rotherley Nursery School will generate more than 4,000 pupil travel journeys each day in an area of less than 4/100ths of a square mile. Many journeys will be by car, and with the resultant corruption of the catchment areas of other schools caused by putting all 420 places in one spot, increased car journeys will be inevitable across the town. Councillors have a viable and cheaper alternative, which is to extend and upgrade existing primary schools around the town an option favoured by most of those consulted, so let's hope they take the right decision on March the 13th. And that was Chris Blackman of Cheriton Road, Winchester.
And that was the last of the letters to the editor. Thank you very much to all of the contributors. And now it's time for your say. We went out on the streets of Winchester and asked passers-by, do you think the scandal over horse meat is a big fuss about nothing? Noel has the replies.
Yes. Madeline Gaffney, 80, pensioner of Takedown Mead, said, well, it is a big fuss, but I don't think it's too much of a fuss because I would not eat horse meat. I don't think you should eat horses. They're sacrosanct, and there are some things you should not eat. While Alison Freeland Searle, 50, project manager of Kestrel Close Badger Farm, said, I do think the media response has been proportionate. Food production has gotten too big. Having said that, I'm not sure how we could get back to small production and animal husbandry and keep it affordable. And Leonard Tatham, 90, retired printer of Whale Street, said, I do think they've made too much out of it. There's nothing wrong with horse meat. But I think the issue is that the food chain is too wide. We should be closer to home in everything we eat. And Abby Jones, 35, homemaker of Froxfield Close Hairstock, said, I don't think it's disproportionate because chemicals they use on horses are harmful to people and the issue of contamination is important. But compared to people dying of starvation, maybe the response is a bit too much.
Now we go back through the years and through our dusty files for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Jane.
25 years ago was 1988, and the first little comment is about John Brown, MP for Winchester and Alton, who has introduced an amendment to his own bill which would dramatically increase the penalties for attending an animal fight in Great Britain. It is designed specifically to increase fines for those involved in dog fights, cock fights, and badger baiting. The bill originally proposed to raise the level of fine from level 1, £50, to level 3, £400. Mr. Brown tried to increase this still further, but this was resisted by the Home Office. And the second comment from 25 years ago, also about John Brown, MP, who was invited to address the Alresford and District Conservative Association and was asked to speak on the proposed community charge, but chose another subject, the NHS, now 40 years old. When the Tories took over in 1979, NHS spending was £7.5 billion a year, but today it is £21 billion. We are not interested in putting more water into this bucket. We know the bucket is leaking, said the MP.
And 50 years ago, Shirley?
Yes, 50 years ago, 1963. New Forest ponies continue to figure in the export market, with call for them in several countries for riding and breeding purposes. The New Forest Pony Breeding Society reports that in 1962, 63 ponies were exported to Holland, 16 to Denmark and 6 to Canada, while individual members sent others to Sweden. Enthusiastic owners in both Canada and the USA have written that interest in their ponies is growing. And the second part of this one, a call for the formation of groups to control production and marketing was made by the Honourable F.C.W. Cornwallis, Chairman of the Quality Bacon Federation in Winchester on Wednesday. He urged 600 farmers and horticulturalists from all over the South, let us get together and stick together. Not only was it essential to be able to supply supermarkets and company shops, but many smaller outlets were forming associations of their own and tending to buy collectively.
And 100 years ago, please, Noel.
Yes, two items from 1913. Before Winchester City Bench, Edward Watson, labourer of no fixed abode, pleaded not guilty to a charge of using obscene language in Market Street on Saturday night. Detective Officer Maybe proved the case, stating that two ladies had complained to him. Prisoner, who remarked that if he had said it, he should be very sorry, was directed to pay a fine of 5 shillings, inclusive, with the alternative of 7 days' imprisonment. Watson, it was stated, had only come out of prison on the previous day, Friday, to being arrested. And, love this, Winchester's Jury Street Literary Society met on Tuesday to discuss and vote on the following proposition. Should the church discountenance the drama and other amusements? Mr. A.G. Swain, in opening, spoke of the distinctive work of the church and of the evil influences of the drama and picture palaces.
And finally, 200 years ago, please, Jane.
And from 1813, the first article. It appears that Bonaparte is very apprehensive of insurrection throughout Germany, ordering 3 or 4 of the opulent people in each town to be sent to Paris as hostages for the obedience of the rest. The conscription is enforced with such rigour that where young men have absented themselves, their fathers are seized till they appear. 1,000 French soldiers who served under the unfortunate General Mallet in the conspiracy at Paris have been disgraced and sent disarmed to Bremen. And the second one, Mr. West, venerable president of the Royal Academy, has, it seems, been offered £10,000 for his new picture, the subject of which is the giving judgment against our Saviour. One enthusiastic amateur has offered £500 beyond any larger sum which may be tendered. It is surprising genius should appear in an artist who has declined into the veil of years and excel all that he displayed in the meridian of life.
And it's back to the present again, because it's time for editorial comment read by Shirley.
Right. Headed, imaginative plan must be handled with care. The idea that the City Council buys Stanmore's New Queen's Head site and relocates the Carroll Centre, Community Centre and Scout Hut there to create a community and leisure hub is certainly attention-grabbing. The vacated land at Summers Close would thus be available for housing. Across Stanmore as a whole, the City Council believes there is potential for more than 400 homes. It looks a bold and imaginative set of ideas, but the devil is always in the detail. Not least, the suggestion that 77 homes could be demolished to free up land. The loss of open space and allotments will also cause concern. The whole issue needs to be handled sensitively, but that does not mean keeping quiet about it for as long as possible. The City Council has a poor record in handling the public relations side of potentially contentious public housing issues. Many will recall the supported housing fiasco in 2002-03, when a report and public consultation was held over new housing in Stanmore and Highcliffe, whilst a council planned hostels for ex-prisoners, Stanmore residents felt betrayed. However, there are signs that the council has learned its lesson. The issue of new housing in Abbots Barton has been handled with much more openness.
And now, Noel has got first person for us.
Yes, I think this is quite an odd article from George Hayter. It's called Britain's Bermuda Triangle. Nowhere else in Britain is there a triangle of constituencies like it. All of us in the threesome, Winchester, Eastleigh and Romsey, appear to be living in an area of parliamentary calamity that is without parallel in modern times. The fall of Chris Hulme is just the latest chapter in a history of personal disaster that permeates the three neighbouring electoral divisions. Since 1994, the careers of no fewer than 4 of the area's MPs have ended in the midst of national news stories involving disgrace or death. Mr. Hulme's story is fresh in the memory. His steely ambition brought him a glittering career. Just months after becoming an MP, he ran for leader of the Lib Dems. He lost, twice. But when the party joined the coalition, he was given a seat in the cabinet. He made enemies, though, and an acrimonious split with wife and family led to newspaper accusations of perverting justice. For 2 years he insisted he was innocent, so that when he eventually admitted the grave charge, Mr. Hoon was exposed as a serial liar and a glittering career evaporated amid public disgust. In 1994, another Eastleigh MP became a national talking point when he accidentally killed himself. Stephen Milligan had been a quiet but popular Tory MP with an apparent liking for autoerotic asphyxiation. The practice, involving an electrical cord round his neck, seems to have resulted in Mr. Milligan accidentally suffocating himself. In those less sexually enlightened times, lurid media curiosity about the MP's personal life added to the tragic circumstances. In Winchester, MP Mark Oughton looked like a little boy until he went bald quite suddenly. He later said his hair loss contributed to a midlife crisis that led him to make regular use of a male prostitute, despite being married with two young children. He had become Lib Dem Home Affairs spokesman, and when the press splashed his rent boy activities, he fled into hiding and resigned. His popularity plummeted, and he did not stand for Parliament again. Michael Colvin was a posh Tory who held the Romsey seat for 17 years, until his death in 2000 in a fire. After prep school at the former West Downs School in Winchester, he went to Eton and Sandhurst. He married a shipping heiress, Nicola Kayser. Despite their great wealth, they failed to install smoke detectors in their mansion at Tangley near Andover. They also failed to properly maintain an ageing TV set there. An inquest later decided the faulty TV was the most likely cause of a blaze that started one night and ripped through the house as the couple slept upstairs. Experts said they probably never woke up. Mercifully, smoke poisoning would have made them unconscious before the flames reached them.
Now we continue with items of general news, starting with one read by Jane.
The first general item is lessons to be learned over late ambulance, says Trust. An investigation has concluded into why an elderly woman who was knocked down by a car was left in the road for 2 hours. But while South Central Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust, SCAS, said it regretted the incident, it declined to elaborate on why the ambulance took so long to arrive or to comment on what, if anything, the investigation revealed. The Chronicle reported previously how the unnamed woman was struck by a car in the city centre on December the 17th last year. Although she was helped by police officers who were quickly on the scene, onlookers were stunned at the length of time it took for an ambulance to attend. Paramedics arrived after an hour, although it was another hour before an ambulance turned up to take the patient to hospital. The woman remained lying down in the road throughout on a cold winter's day. A spokesman for SCAS said in a statement, South Central Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust would sincerely like to apologise for the delay. It is regrettable that on this occasion we did not dispatch to the high standards which we would normally expect, and we believe that this is not acceptable. We are using this opportunity to learn and educate staff as a result of this incident to ensure that we improve our services to our patients in the future.
This one is headed, Bringing the Past to Life. Winchester City Museum welcomed a legionary soldier in full military garb and a reenactor in period finery to enlighten schoolchildren and parents alike during the half-term holiday. It was all part of an effort to show how the people of Venta Belgarum, as the city was known in Roman times, lived nearly 2,000 years ago. Robin Isles, Education Officer at Winchester City Council, said, "We are always delighted to be able to host reenactment events like this, as they are very popular with people of all ages and really help to bring the past to life. During the two-day invasion, there were lots to see and do, with replica Roman objects to handle, museum displays of real Roman jewellery, coins and fabulous mosaics. Councillor Patricia Stallard, the city's portfolio holder for culture, heritage and sport, said, "This event portrays a fascinating and influential period of history in Winchester, the birth of modern society as we know it. These entertaining reenactors help bring the city's Roman history alive for today's inhabitants." And with this article, we have two rather nice coloured photographs of these children at the museum. And there's a table in front of them in one picture with all these wonderful architects to be seen.
I must read you this after the item I read from 100 years ago. Naked rambler arrested again. Hampshire's naked rambler has found himself facing court once again after his lack of clothes sparked numerous calls to police. Stephen Gough was arrested in Shawford Road, Shawford, last Friday afternoon following calls from members of the public. The 53-year-old of Chamberlain Road, Eastleigh, was charged with a public order offence and is due to appear at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on March the 14th. Gough only walked free from court in Oxford earlier this month after charges of outraging public decency against him were dropped. He was walking naked from the Scottish border to his mother's home in Eastleigh when he was arrested in Carterton, West Oxfordshire, on December the 4th last year.
And this one is about a Tudor ring found in a field near a village. An unusually well-preserved Tudor ring has been unearthed near Hursley. The ring, which dates back to the 16th or 17th century, was found in a field last August by amateur metal detectorist Angela Stone and is believed to be a pilgrim sign. Hampshire Finds liaison officer Katie Hines said the ring was in lovely condition but declined to say what it might be worth. She added that Winchester museums were now interested in acquiring it. Miss Hines said that such pilgrim signs were popular from the 14th century through to Victorian times. It was customary for people to prove their pilgrimage with a badge or a ring of some kind. Graham Short, coroner for Central Hampshire, said he was satisfied that it should be classified under law as treasure, since it is more than 300 years old and its gold is more than 10% purity.
This one is headed, "Through traffic can carry on using road." Access through one of Winchester's narrowest streets will continue despite a bid by residents to stop through traffic. Concerned at the narrowness of the road and the number of pedestrians using it, people living in and near to Hyde Church Lane petitioned the City Council to prevent all vehicles, except those requiring access, from using it. But officers said an access-only sign for vehicles would be unlikely to succeed, since police had already said they lacked the resources to enforce it. At a meeting of the city's traffic and parking bosses on Monday, resident Margaret Robertson said, "I think this is so important. It's people's safety. Please let us have that temporary regulation order and see how it works." Councillor Sue Nems told the meeting, "Walking on Hyde Church Lane is taking one's life in one's hands. It's no good saying there aren't any accidents, because there are, in fact, a great many near accidents. The road has long been a source of contention, with the Chronicle reporting in 2011 on a demonstration that saw dozens of protesters blocking the road. An experimental no-entry sign was placed at the Worthy Lane end as a result. Traffic officers accepted that a high number of pedestrians and cyclists use the route, around 600 a day, but felt the sign has been successful in reducing damage to properties. They also said there has been only one reported accident in the last 5 years, and so the County Council would be unable to support an access-only proposal.
Affordable homes set for approval. Abbots Barton scheme is the first in 10-year plan. Winchester City Council is set to build 50 affordable homes in Abbots Barton over the next 6 years. A council committee was poised to approve the £7.5 million plans yesterday, that was Wednesday, as the Chronicle went to press. It is part of an overall programme to build 350 affordable homes in the district in the next 10 years. The council wants to build on a mix of open space and garages in Austin Close, Dyson Drive, Charles Close, Hussey Close, Hillier Way and Colborne Court. Houses would be a mix of three-bed family homes, two-bed flats and dormer bungalows. But the development would also provide landscaping for new public spaces, including a new footbridge and trim trail along Nuns Walk. Councillor Ian Tate, portfolio holder for New Homes Delivery, said, "It's a real privilege to be leading the council's new homes programme. I recognise that getting the balance right between maximising the number of homes delivered and ensuring that they respect the needs of the existing community can be very demanding. Winchester is a city that has seen continual development over its history, and good quality, well-designed homes will only go to strengthen and enhance this vibrant place." The proposals follow months of consultation with residents, although many opposed the plans for reasons including losing green spaces, introducing parking permits and overcrowding the area. But in a report to the committee, Andrew Palmer, head of New Homes Delivery, said, "While there was significant objection from many to the proposals for new housing, many also appreciated the need for additional homes and were able to identify where they would prefer housing to go. The council is engaging with a local action group which has been established to further discussions on the framework." The council would also set up a community lettings plan for new residents, giving priority to local people needing affordable homes and taking into account employment and school factors. If approved, the proposals will go to full council meeting and then on to a planning committee. The council's housing waiting list is currently 3,500 strong, with 100 more joining each month and an average wait period of 3 to 6 years.
And this is entitled Group Welcomes Expert Speakers. Two world-renowned experts will be in Winchester to mark the city's National Osteoporosis Support Group's 10th anniversary. Professor Cyrus Cooper of the University of Southampton and Professor Susan Lantham-New of the University of Surrey will speak at a free health event next month. It will be chaired by Dr. Annie Cooper, consultant rheumatologist at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The Society's Southwest Regional Manager, Maureen Morrison, said, "This is a marvellous opportunity for people to learn more about how they can keep their bones healthy through diet and beneficial lifestyle changes. There are currently thought to be about 3 million people with osteoporosis in Britain, and the National Osteoporosis Society is the only UK-wide charity dedicated to improving the diagnosis, prevention and treatment of osteoporosis and fragility fractures. The event will be held on Tuesday, March the 12th, from 7 p.m. until 9:30 p.m. at the Winchester Hotel and Spa on Worthy Lane."
This item is headed, "Our monarchy is outdated. Discuss." A passionate delivery by Delphine Leggett of St Swithin's School, entitled "The Sole Purpose of Education is to Prepare Children for the World of Work," created a lively start to the English Speaking Union Public Speaking Competition's regional final. Other titles were "British Monarchy is an Outdated Concept which Drains Money that Could Be Put to Better Use," and "Private Cars Should Be Rationed." Also on offer was "We Have a Moral Duty to Intervene in Countries Where Governments Are Oppressing the People," and "Children Should Be Banned from Working in the Performing Arts and Professional Sports." The winners were Bournemouth School for Girls. Runners-up were Bishop Wordsworth Grammar School in recognition of Simon Jago's talk, and the chairmanship and questioning by Tom Bostock and Harry Stovin Bradford of Delphine Leggett's talk. The winners and the runners-up were presented with book tokens by Mr. R.D. Stratton, President of the Salisbury and South Region of the ESU, and all participants were presented with certificates. The ESU is an international education charity seeking to promote worldwide communication for people with knowledge of English. There are scholarships and awards for students, teachers, writers and others.
This is a lovely story. Head over heels in love. Vera Wisely quite literally fell for husband Alex on their first chance meeting. And now the couple from Fair Oak, who conducted a wartime romance, are celebrating 70 years together. They met in October 1942, when Vera tripped over Alex while he was tying his shoelace at the store where Vera worked. Both were serving in the Royal Navy at the time. Vera was a petty officer at HMS Pembroke Naval Barracks in Chatham, Kent. Alex asked her to the pictures that same night, and they were married 4 months later at St. Paul's Church in Chatham. She was very embarrassed, said Alex, about how they met. I picked her up and apologised to her, and she said it wasn't your fault. She was perfect in every way. I was surprised, really, that she took to me. It was the best day that God ever made when I met her. After their marriage, he spent 18 months overseas, so the couple could only communicate through letters. During the war, Alex, now 93, survived being bombed and torpedoed 3 times, notably surviving the sinking of HMS Southampton off the coast of Sicily in 1941. After the war, they moved to Alex's hometown of Liverpool, where he retired after working for many years with the post office. Vera, meanwhile, worked as a school secretary for more than 20 years. They have 5 children, 9 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. The couple moved to Fair Oak in 1980. Vera, 92, is now a resident of Sunnycroft Care Home in the West End, but Alex manages to visit her most days. I still love her very much, said Alex. They were joined by a family at the home to celebrate their platinum wedding, along with a cake and a telegram from the Queen, and a lovely colour photograph of the couple sharing a kiss, inset with a black and white photograph of their wedding day, where Alex is in his naval uniform. They both look very smart and very young.
And this is about the butcher's cash-in on horse meat scandal. Concerned public seek out locally sourced beef. It's a scandal that has rocked supermarkets across Hampshire and beyond. But the horse meat controversy is doing wonders for butchers' shops and beef producers around Winchester, who say they are reaping the rewards of providing locally sourced meat. Rachel Waldron, owner of Beechcroft Farm in Sarum Road, Winchester, which rears sheep and cows, said businesses was up 10% on last year as customers had confidence in what they were selling. She said, "We can point to our animals from our shop. Those are our animals. We take them to Laverstock Park in our own transport and come back with the whole carcasses. It's the good old saying of you get what you pay for with us." She added that sausages, burgers and mince sales were up 25%. Marcus Cole, manager at the T.H. Burroughs Butchers at the Good Life Farm Shop in Headbourne Worthy, said he expected customer numbers to grow for the next 6 months. He said, "It's helped us massively. We must be seeing between 15 to 20 new faces per week, and many of them younger. It's not a huge sales increase, but it really helps." Nigel Foundling, who runs C. Evans & Son in Alsford with his wife Eunice, said business had improved as customers know they can trust them. He said, "We have definitely had more trade as a result of this, because people now want to come to their local butcher. You do not know what's in the food at the supermarket, but people can see us bring our carcasses in, and they know they are dealing with the genuine article. It helps that the business has been here for 100 years, and myself and a colleague have been here for 30 years, so we are pretty well known in the community. If we don't recognise horse meat when it comes in, we should be taken out back and shot." Nigel and Eunice took over the West Street shop 15 years ago from the Evans brothers, whose name the shop still bears. John Soule, owner of Soule Butchers in Broad Street, Alresford, said they had seen a 10% increase in customers since the scandal broke. Dan Sherfield, manager of John Robinson Butchers in Stockbridge, said it has seen more customers through the door since the scandal broke. He said, "We have double-checked with all of our suppliers and they all guaranteed beef. Everything is local and we just believe in a fair price, a fair product and a fair profit. Our customers can see where it's all from and they're free to look around the butchers." Mike Wright, chairman of County Food Group, Hampshire Fair, said the majority of its producers and butchers had seen footfall and sales increases. Toby Botell, Hampshire Farmers Market chairman, said, "We've had some cracking markets over the last few weeks, with more shoppers coming specifically to buy fresh meat to cook their own meals from scratch." And the article is accompanied by a delightful photograph of three very young men with spiky hair but neatly dressed in white shirts with blue and white ties to match their blue and white butcher's aprons, all stretching forth, holding out an enormous joint of beef ready for roasting. And they are prime cut Josh Vale, Marcus Cole and Joe Johnson of T.H. Burroughs Butchers, the Good Life Farm Shop in Headbourne Worthy.
And this one is headed, "Sally on Cue to Open Cancer Support Centre." A new support centre has opened in Winchester for cancer sufferers. Mayor of Winchester Frank Pearson and BBC South Today presenter Sally Taylor officially opened the Wessex Cancer Trust Cancer Support Centre last Wednesday. The St George's Street Centre offers free services like professional counselling, befriending and massage, and reflexology therapy to all cancer patients, their families and carers. Sally Hall, chief executive of the trust, said, "We recognise that there was a need for this in Winchester, for more support for cancer patients and their families. This service is also being funded from the revenue from our charity shop in Week, so we are very much focused on local support and we are working very closely with local GPs and the Royal Hampshire County Hospital to make sure they are aware we are here." Miss Hall said the centre cost around £40,000 per year to run, but was dependent on donations and received no outside funding. Sally Taylor, who battled breast cancer in 1999, said, "Had something like this been available when I had cancer, it would have transformed my life." The centre, which has been running since December, is currently managed by Jill Dreyer, who said, "We have been really well received so far and a lot of people have been taking up the services. It's the first of its kind in Winchester and we have had a very positive reception from service users and our contacts at the hospital, and we want to keep that going." The centre will run 3 days a week from Tuesday to Thursday. Anyone who would like to make a donation or volunteer should contact Claire Tuckett on 023-8067-2200. I repeat that, on 023-8067-2200.
This is headed "None of Your Business." A City Council turf war continued over roadworks in Stanmore. Conservative ward councillors were furious in January after Liberal Democrat Martin Todd, who is running for County Council in the Westgate ward, including Stanmore, campaigned for repairs to Stanmore Lane. Stanmore councillor Jamie Scott, who says he has declined to run for the county in Westgate, said, "It's the responsibility of Stanmore councillors to look after it. We do not need someone coming from outside the ward to do that. We got Mel Kendall down from the county to have a look at the road, and he immediately put it on the works programme for 2013 to 2014. We've taken action, which is what was needed, rather than someone trying to take a political campaign to the ward. But, Councillor Todd responded, the important thing is to get all the problems in Stanmore Lane fixed. That's what Lib Dem councillors have been asking for, and what I will continue pushing for. Councillor Scott shouldn't be surprised that the Lib Dem county candidate, county councillor and city councillor are working as a team. We want the problem solved.
And this is entitled Sainsbury's Support for Young Carers. A Winchester supermarket has raised £1,200 for a children's charity over the past 6 months. Sainsbury's Middlebrook Street branch has reached the halfway point in its year-long partnership with Winchester Young Carers. The supermarket has been supporting several events, including a Halloween event at the Kayak Centre in Winnall, putting on a Christmas dinner, and staging Paralympic activities. Store manager Stuart Purdy said, "When our customers helped us to select Winchester Young Carers as this year's charity partner, we knew this was a charity that would really capture the hearts and minds of our colleagues. We've now held several fundraising activities, and we're working to ensure the second half of our partnership will support the charity further." Ben Hogbin, Young Carers project manager, added, "The support which has been provided so far has been really beneficial in helping to raise our profile in the Winchester area, and we thank Sainsbury's Winchester customer and colleagues who have generously recognised the partnership and made a donation to our cause. Donations can be made in collection buckets in the store until May."
Take part in County's popular Food Fest. Businesses and organisations across Hampshire are being invited to share in the success of the annual Hampshire Food Festival this July. The event, run by County Food Group Hampshire Fair, is a celebration of local food and drink available from producers and suppliers throughout the county. Last year, the festival attracted nearly 300,000 visitors to 72 events hosted by 64 businesses and organisations from across the county. These included hotels, restaurants, pubs, cafes, farms, attractions, libraries, town centres and country shows, bringing in an estimated £5.97 million to the local community. Local businesses can get involved in a number of ways, including holding an event, promoting a special festival local food menu, submitting accommodation details as a place to stay during the festival, or advertising in the programme. For more information, visit hampshirefair.co.uk/foodfestival or contact Emily Acott on 01962 847098. I'll repeat that. Visit hampshirefair.co.uk/foodfestival or contact Emily Acott on 01962 847098.
This is about the City Council budget. Winchester Civic Chiefs have pledged to get even more for even less after approving their annual budget last week. The Conservative-led City Council rubber-stamped its £15.4 million budget at a full meeting last Thursday. It involved freezing council tax for a second year, with the Band D charge remaining at £126.27. Finance boss Councillor Stephen Godfrey said, "I'm pleased to be able to present a balanced budget without increasing council tax or reducing any of the council's essential frontline services. We've started to address challenges by gradually reducing spending and reorganising teams and functions. This current financial year has been difficult, but we're near the end of it without having made any significant changes to the budget. But the Lib Dems criticised the Cabinet for balancing the budget with £500,000 from council reserves, with £1.1 million more expected to be withdrawn next year. Lib Dem leader Kelsey Lerney said, "We need to start immediately looking for radical changes in the way the council provides services. There are things we do very well, but many of these things can be done adequately. We can still provide a good service to our residents without providing the gold-plated one. We should agree a council tax increase and re-evaluate the budget within the financial envelope that brings." Colleague Councillor Martin Todd added, "The only thing I can see we're getting less of in the future is our reserves. It would make a huge difference if we are prepared to make the harder decisions earlier, so we're not faced with having to make dramatically harder decisions in 1 or 2 years' time." But Council Leader Keith Wood defended the budget and said it was a sensible approach. He added, "Where we can continue to provide a good service for Winchester residents, we should do so. Our policy is to gradually ensure that council finances are sound, and we will take responsibility for that. We want to promote the city as a place to do business and have more people employed here and get more money that way. We have to be more inventive, much more inventive, than simply cutting costs." As reported in the Chronicle last week, councillors declined to award themselves an increase in their allowances. But the proposals included making the council a living wage employer, a system which guarantees its lowest paid staff enough income to meet basic living needs. The current living wage set for outside London is £7.45 per hour. By not increasing council tax, the authority is able to claim a government grant of £70,000, equivalent to a 1% increase. The budget covers council services such as refuse collection, housing, environmental health and planning. It was carried by a majority verdict.
And this is the Westminster Diary by Steve Brine, Member of Parliament for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. Last week saw something of a holy grail when it comes to policy making, especially in the area of criminal justice. Constituents will know I sit as a member of the Justice Select Committee, and we will soon be publishing the final report of our inquiry into youth justice. We have been considering it this week, and you will no doubt hear about it soon enough via the national media. But, almost as a precursor, last week saw the publication of Transforming Youth Custody, which is a joint set of proposals from the Justice Secretary and the Education Secretary. Finally, we have recognition that reducing offending among young people is as much about education as it is about punishment. The good news is the number of young people entering the criminal justice system is at its lowest for over a decade, and credit should go to the work of the police, youth offending teams and others who have made this happen. However, there remains a hard core of prolific offenders, and estimates suggest that nearly a third of youth crime is committed by just 5% of offenders. For this hard core, a sentence in custody is not putting a stop to their behaviour. So with the average cost of a youth custodial place at £100,000 a year, and 73% of young offenders who leave custody re-offending within a year, it is very clear we cannot go on like this. Transforming Youth Custody is consulting on a radically different approach, which aims to deliver value for us as taxpayers, reduce re-offending, and set young offenders on the path to a better life. Education is key. We want to see secure colleges providing education in a period of detention rather than detention with education as an afterthought. Local youth charities, education experts, and I suspect a great many people locally will be interested in this area, and I would urge you to take a look via www.stevebrine.com/youthjustice. That is www.stevebrine.com/youthjustice. Finally, I opened the WINAC shop in the Brook Centre recently. which is there to help residents take advantage of the government's groundbreaking Green Deal programme. The shop, which is open 7 days a week until the end of March, has everything you need to make your home as energy-saving as possible. Heaven knows, with utility bills what they are right now, every little helps, so do drop by and chat with the team. As ever, much more online about my local and Westminster-based work at www.stevebryan.com or my office on 01962 791110. That is 01962 791110.
Moves to stop city rat run. A row over a rat run through the city centre rumbles on as a survey reveals the majority of drivers are using the route illegally. A county council report showed 74% of motorists were using Simon Street and St Swithin Street as a shortcut, not for access to the square or Great Minster Street. Winchester City Council will now press ahead with plans for a 6-foot width restriction at the junction of Great Minster Street with Simon Street, meaning many delivery vehicles will be forced to access the square from the north, providing some traffic relief for residents of St Swithin Street and Simon Street. Council officers also recommended the introduction of two-way traffic on Market Lane from St Morris's Covert to the junction with Market Street. The report by Andy Hickman, head of Access and Infrastructure, said, "It is also hoped that this will act as a deterrent for people who are currently illegally using the route as a shortcut, as they will be delayed by delivery vehicles in Market Lane and Market Street." A further report will be brought before the committee within 18 months to evaluate the changes.
Queristers perform for visitor group. Winchester College Chapel will soon echo to the sound of music, both sacred and secular. The college queristers are performing an evening concert on Saturday, March the 9th, to raise funds for Southampton and Winchester Visitors Group, a local charity which helps homeless refugees and asylum seekers. Malcolm Archer, director of chapel music, will also talk about the history of the 650-year-old choir founded by William of Wykeham in 1382. Wykeham's statutes made provision for 16 boys, called queristers, to sing at the chapel services, and today they are still awarded means-tested bursaries. For centuries, the queristers existed as a small school on their own within Winchester College, but today the boys aged 8 to 13 are educated at the Pilgrim School, which also trains the cathedral choristers. Tickets, which cost £15, are available from Jessica Hassan on 07503 176 350. I'll say that again, 07503 176 350.
And traders are the pick of the crop. Hampshire Farmers Market stallholders took a short break to receive some awards in the middle of a busy market day. The Hampshire Farmers Market Awards, as voted for by the public, included Best Produce, the Best Food to Go, the Best Dressed Stall and the Best Personality. Stallholders sell locally sourced produce at Hampshire Farmer Market's regular venues across the county, including Winchester, which is one of the largest farmers' markets in the country. Hampshire Farmer's Market's business manager, Alex Handford, said, "There was no red carpet, just the appreciation of our market visitors who have turned out in all weathers to support their local producers and who also appreciate the efforts of our suppliers make to get to all our markets during cold, wet and snowy weather." The award winners are Best Produce, Botel's Farm Shop, East Tisted; Best Food to Go, Broughton Water Buffalo, Broughton; Best Dressed Stall, FA Secrets, Milford; and Best Personality, The Flower Stall, that's F-L-O-U-R, The Flower Stall, Andover. And visit Hampshire Farmers Markets. .co.uk for a list of all the market locations and dates. There's a very jolly photo of all the stallholders that have won certificates wearing their market gear and holding their produce from chunks of great chunks of chicken to loaves of bread and bunches of interesting looking carrots from Secrets.
I'm afraid concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argalls, Kate Butler and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers. Thanks to Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful. It's goodbye for now and thanks for listening again. And we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet together with a laminated card when you finish listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.